Okay, welcome back. We are joined in this segment by Michelle Granger, who is a professor in the English department here at New Mexico State in Las Cruces. And Michelle just got back from a meeting, inaugural meeting, of Higher Education Labor United. So can you tell us about that?
Sure, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. We met on Saturday at the AFT building in Albuquerque. It was a group of dozens of union members from across the state, and every single higher ed labor union was represented, including some staff unions, faculty unions, adjunct faculty unions. It was just exciting to be in the room with all those folks. It was hosted by Ernesto Longa, who's the vice president of the AFT at UNM. Really excited group of people.
And what is the organization hoping to achieve?
You know, there was a lot of conversations about how siloed each campus can feel. New Mexico's a big state geographically, and we're separated by great distances, but our goals are almost perfectly aligned. You know, we're looking for higher ed to have the same healthcare split in our premiums that other state employees now get, 80-20. You know, we don't have that. We're the only group of state employees that does not have an 80-20 split for our healthcare premiums. So that is going to be our first thing to tackle together. But moreover, I think we just want to be in communication and in being united, as opposed to sitting in our separate areas. We can get a lot accomplished together.
HELU is a national effort, isn't it?
Yes, it's a national effort. And we had someone, our keynote speaker, came in from Massachusetts. He led the campaign for Fair Share, which was a huge campaign that they launched in Massachusetts to get some tax dollars coming in for schools and roads from some of the highest income earners in Massachusetts. So this guy that was talking to us had led this huge effort, and he was explaining how they were able to achieve that because of the coalition that they built. And so they built a coalition of all these different labor unions, and how rare it is for labor unions to unite in that way. Often there could be competition for members, I guess, between the different unions. And so the general membership, the bodies of these unions, are starting to come together to achieve bigger goals than we can independently.
What is the status at NMSU? I know last year there was a big fight, I think, over the student. What's the word I'm trying to struggle for? The student who helped teach in the classroom.
Oh, the grad workers union?
Yeah.
So on NMSU campus, we have a very animated group of grad student workers. They're actually in a different union than NMSU. And so they were there. They were represented there. That seems to be the case for a lot of these higher ed unions. There will be different designations for grad students, for the professional staff, for the faculty. And so they were asking for tuition reimbursement. You know, grad students at New Mexico State have historically had to pay tuition, which is pretty that's not typical.
Yeah.
Most grad students on most higher ed campuses don't have to pay tuition. So they just actually had a big win in February. They're getting tuition reimbursement. They're back at the bargaining table right now. So we want to support them in any way that we can. And I'm real excited about the grad students. I was actually so impressed by both the UNM grad students and the NMSU grad students. They have so much energy. They're so smart. They're so ready to get to work. And they're already working so much. I just, you know, but I guess they have us beat in our energy. Me, personally.
Well, it's that time in the semester when nobody has any energy. But how are things going in terms of the negotiations between the NMSU faculty union?
Well, we are in the middle of negotiations. They've been going on for over a year now. We have presented all of our articles that we're going to present, and now we're waiting for responses so that we can get into some agreements. We have tentative agreements for 11 of our articles that we have presented. They held back a lot of articles that had to do with compensation. So now we're heading into the big stuff, the stuff that seemingly has the biggest impact. Although we're very proud of the tentative agreements that we've reached on things like facilities. I'm forgetting some of the other articles we TA'd on.
I think grievances and discipline.
Oh, grievances and discipline. Yes, we were very proud of the work that we did and the collaboration efforts of all. You know, we wrote all of our articles organically. Nothing that we proposed to administration, another union has proposed that. So we wrote all of our articles from scratch, which is a heavy lift.
So, as you mentioned, you're already a member of other unions. The goal of Higher Education Labor United is to bring all of those different disparate unions together. Is that correct? And what benefit would there be to that?
So, you know, I think besides just community building, a big benefit is that we can lobby the state legislator together. The state legislator passed 80-20 for healthcare split for the whole state employees except for higher ed. And so that's our first target. You know, that's mm-hmm. the first thing that we're going to work on is getting that for higher ed. And some schools do have that. Like Western has a 90-10 split. NMSU, our top tier folks are paying 40%. It's a 40-60 split, which is incredibly high. It's very much out of line with most of the rest of the country, certainly out of line with New Mexico, public school employees, other faculty at other campuses. So that's going to be our first target is, you know, we want to build power to be able to advocate at the state level.
Do you have any theories on why 80-20 like passed for public school teachers and not for higher ed this time around?
It's a really good question. We did get an in memoriam bill passed, which I guess is where they say we do care about this, but we don't have the money. There was a couple lobbyists there for the different unions that were talking to us at the HELU summit, and they mentioned before you present a bill that has any economic impact, it must already be allocated through the Legislative Finance Committee. Money must already be there or you will not get a bill passed. So that money had not been allocated in the budget, which is confusing. I mean, I think we're all confused about that. Why prioritize other state workers against, you know, it's not that our higher ed is are not paid very well here in New Mexico. I think there's a big misunderstanding about how much folks make. And so in many cases, we make much less than LCPS teachers make. So I it's a good question, but we're going to be tackling this with our legislators this next session. In the interim, while we are between the legislative sessions, a lot of work happens in committees, and so we're going to be following our legislators around the state and showing up at meetings and bringing this to their attention because they may not even be aware individually at how disadvantaged and disenfranchised higher ed workers really are.
Did you want to say anything about premium increases over time in the health insurance premiums? Because it seems like that is also an issue.
Yes, our premiums seem to just keep going up, and there was a bunch of new plans on the healthcare on the open enrollment that just launched, and they have much higher deductibles than previous plans. So even if the dollar amount looks similar, if you really dig into the details, the deductibles are high, and yes, these have gone up by 5%, I mean, more than the cost of living each year, these premiums. And I think anybody that lives in New Mexico knows that we already struggle with healthcare here, access and finding doctors and things. And so if you add an extra barrier of exorbitant healthcare costs and then having to find a doctor, you know, a lot of folks are struggling with their health here.
I haven't been following it real closely. I'm curious, what are the tuition rates at NMSU? Have they been fairly steady? Are they going up?
That's a great question.
Tuition has not been raised at NMSU for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, and the chisme that I heard is that there was discussion among the regents about raising tuition, but that the legislature really doesn't want NMSU to raise tuition. See, the thing about the Opportunity Scholarship, whereby people can go to higher education, people who don't have a bachelor's degree can go there cost-free, is that ultimately you get more people in the system, but if you don't allow tuition to be raised, how do you cover the increased demand on the higher education entity? How do you pay for more faculty or keep the faculty that you do have, for example? So I originally thought, oh, this will be great because it will keep, you know, priming the pump of higher education. But if you can't raise tuition, you can't really count on that.
You're right. You can't even keep up with inflation.
That's right.
I mean, you know, and NMSU is very healthy right now. We just got the analysis back from the NEA Financial analyst, and looking at all of their budgets that are publicly, you know, available data, NMSU is in a very healthy position, more so than any other public higher ed institution in New Mexico. And not only that, but our enrollment keeps going up, partially due, I'm sure a lot due, to the Opportunity Scholarship, which is excellent because universities across the country are seeing declines in enrollment, some drastically, some, you know, just smaller declines. But we are not seeing that. We're seeing more and more students. NMSU is pulling in more and more money. And, you know, faculty are not sharing in that. We have a big problem with retainment of faculty. Mm-hmm. Folks come here, brilliant people right out of grad school or out of the teaching force, and come in and students love them and they take a job somewhere else for better pay. I mean, I've seen it happen over and over again. And it's just really sad for our students. You know, I think one thing that's important to New Mexico is economic development. We keep hearing this. You know, legislators seem to really want to attract businesses, but we're not going to attract businesses that actually build income bases without having more graduates, more folks with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, PhDs to staff those companies that might come in and actually make an economic difference in our state. And a key component of economic development then is to support your higher ed faculty.
There's been a lot of discussion at the national level lately, a focus on higher education, and I'm sure a lot of the administrators aren't comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with a lot of it. Part of that discussion, and I was a little bit surprised, the percentage of international students that are, you know, attending college here in the United States. I mean, certainly it has over the years worked to our benefit to get the best and the brightest from other nations, but it's gotten to the point now where people are wondering if our kids are getting crowded out. I think that is one of the huge advantages of the Opportunity Scholarship, is every graduate from a New Mexico high school is given the opportunity. I'm not sure where the question is in all of that, but what are your thoughts on that whole great big debate?
Well, you know, I have a daughter that's a senior in college this semester, and she's going to be applying to grad school this fall. So these questions weigh heavy on my mind. Yeah. I don't have an answer. I know that in general, universities often do get higher tuition rates for out-of-state, out-of-country folks, and so it does seem like there's an incentive. But I think that we live in a global world, and I only see the benefit of our kids having exposure to folks from other countries. And so I think that we should be focusing on expanding research, expanding programs, hiring new professors. You know, universities should be in a growth mindset and not in a let's exclude these folks so that our kids could come up. You know, if my daughter was in grad school studying next to somebody from another country, exposing her to a culture she's never, or in a perspective mm-hmm. that she's never had before, I just can't imagine that being a bad thing. But I do see your point. I mean, the mindset of higher ed in this country has been a little bit of a poverty mindset. There's only so much to go around. We should make more pies, right? Not split those pies into smaller pieces.
Yeah. And of course, all this is happening when we're seeing, you know, research funds being slashed and, you know, a whole bunch of ugliness towards higher education at the federal level.
100%. I think that's a much bigger threat to higher ed is just the gutting of research. Yes. I mean, if you look at the numbers, it guts me when I see what's happening. It's very sad. And we were a leader in so many industries and spaces, and that was built off the university system. The higher ed system makes America so competitive on the global stage. And so the attacks coming from the current administration, and they're trying to pit, you know, our communities against each other, and they're trying to say, you know, we need to invest more in the trades and trying to create a situation where the trades folks are against the high, you know, the bachelor's folks with bachelor right. programs. And that's just not the answer. And that doesn't actually bear out in the details or in how Americans live and work.
Speaking of threats to higher education, I know that you teach English. Got any thoughts about AI?
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts about AI. I spend a lot of my time outside of the classroom reading every article that comes out. You know, folks have a lot of different perspectives on this. You know, even within my own department, we have a lot of variation in how we're approaching this. Personally, I am really upset about the way that our taxpayers are subsidizing these data centers that are going to come and then take our jobs. I think the business model is really robber baron level of industry here, and we're not doing things to benefit economic development of our average, you know, citizens. Instead, the entire focus is on what do the tech titans want? Let's give it to them. I think, though, that, you know, it is here. I think AI is here. And so in my classroom, I teach students how to use it. I think about it as a mid-level drafting tool. So I teach technical and professional communication. And so I have colleagues that disagree with me, but personally, and some that teach it even more. But I'm kind of in the middle where I feel like I give my students the moral cause for human invention. I have them read articles on what they are missing if they are not thinking about these things and they're letting a machine think for them, because we actually lose cognitive abilities very quickly. And so if we're not stretching that, working that muscle of our brain, it gets atrophied. And I have a real concern about the future of folks being able to critically think about things. But it is a drafting tool. It can be a helpful research tool. So we talk about it, you know, human invention is paramount. And then how can you use these systems ethically
right.
To be competitive, but not, I say, let AI, use AI as a tool. Don't be a tool of AI.
As an English teacher, do you worry that, I mean, people are just going to stop learning the skill of writing, how to construct sentences? I mean, the computer will do it all for us.
Yes. I think that's a big concern. I think that on a language level, when you have to work out the sentence, you're actually thinking deeper about the topic. You know, I also tell my students, we are community people. Like we have evolved. Humans have evolved in communities, and we think deeply about subjects when we write about them and when we talk about them. And that's when you actually own that information and it becomes part of your toolkit. So if they're not engaging even on a sentence level through utterances or writing, they are not learning that material right. in a way that they can use it. Right. So that is a concern. My daughter's at St. John's in Santa Fe.
Oh, wow.
Yes. They do not culturally use AI. It is very much against their ethos. Like, yeah, they have a real ethic there against AI. So it's not even like the professors have to try to bust people. The students are policing each other and saying, you know, it's an embarrassment if you were to be caught using AI. At
it's
St.
cheating.
John's. It's cheat. That,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I feel about it. But, you know, nobody can do math anymore because, you know, everybody's got their phone can do it for them. So
I think the biggest danger with AI, well, people say artificial intelligence, but basically at this point, it's large language models that have sucked up a lot of people's personal copyrighted information. It's based on like a stolen corpus to begin with. But the biggest concern in higher ed is that people don't have the background to be able to check the output of things that they ask if they have never learned those things. So it's different with people who have spent 30 or 40 years in a field understanding what is true and what's not true, and whether you're getting garbage back from a large language model that you have asked a question of, and the average person who just says, oh, this is the first thing that came up in my search engine, because the first thing usually is the AI summary. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think half or three quarters of the time it comes back with something that isn't true. So
that's so true. I mean, one of our, you know, part of my job is really to teach information literacy, because in a writing course, we must research. That's part of that whole model of writing. You have nothing to write about if you don't have the research to, you know, the expert opinions as well as the community opinions. The AI summary is just scraping the internet. So it'll scrape influencers. It'll scrape, you know, conspiracy theorists. It'll scrape whatever it can find. And it's just a predictive text on steroids. So it's just predicting what the most likely combination of words to come next are. And often you can get some, I tell my students, if you're researching what time the movie that you want to go see starts with your buddies, use AI summary. Ask ChatGPT. If this is something like your health or a legal concern or something that has to do with your finances, a project, something that you care about, would you trust, you know, the general internet to right. solve that for you?
Yeah.
Like, what are the stakes? You know, when you're asking ChatGPT or AI summary, what are the stakes? But, you know, this brings me back to how much faculty at NMSU are having to deal with right now. We are dealing with AI every day in our classrooms, trying desperately to make sure students are still learning, engaging with the material. It's kind of like fighting back the tide. And we are just not compensated to deal with the world that we are having to work in nowadays. I mean, a third of NMSU employees, actually it's over a third, make less than LCPS employees. And we value our LCPS employees. We're so, I'm so grateful for the work that they do. When students come into my classroom, usually they came out of Las Cruces Public Schools, and I'm amazed. And I've seen how much better the education has gotten when these folks are paid fairly. I have seen it with my own eyes. I have seen the quality of student that wants to become a teacher rise because they know that they can make a fair wage. And I want that for our community. We deserve at NMSU higher ed to be paid fairly, even commensurate with LCPS would be amazing.
I'm curious how you and your fellow coworkers feel about what has happening, the changes that have taken place in college sports. It has always kind of been this coddled, special, I don't know what you want to call it. It's always kind of had special treatment. But now since, you know, the Supreme Court ruling on name, image, and likeness, it has just become a professional entertainment industry. And people are getting paid commensurate with what people in the entertainment industry get paid. And having that happen on the same campus where you guys are struggling to get by, I mean, has that created any kind of additional...
You know, that's such a great question. I mean, that is the, you know, besides AI, I think the NIL is the question in, yeah. in collegiate. You know, you have to think way back. Like, I've thought about this a lot. Why are sports coupled with higher ed? And it really does go back to the Greeks, and it goes back to the ancient tradition of the university, perfection of the body and the mind, right? This whole idea that we are producing young people that are both, you know, poets and football players. I mean, that's the project, as we inherited it from the ancient Greeks. And I had students write papers for years that student athletes deserve to be paid. And I think there was a massive imbalance on how universities were using these folks, these star athletes, image and likeness, to make themselves so much money. And often these kids couldn't afford to eat. You know, they really could not afford to adequately fuel their bodies for the amount of output that they're asked to do. And so it really was inequitable. But I agree, the system that has come about has majorly disadvantaged athletes actually themselves, because now they can be put into a portal, and I think there's even pressure, if they're not performing well, to go ahead and go to another school. I had a track athlete in a class of mine that had been at her third university. And so she was exhausted. She felt unsupported. She didn't feel the community. So the folks at the top that are, you know, the top earning maybe basketball, football players are able to cash in on this, but the average athlete is not. It's not good for universities, and it's mostly, I see it in the student athletes. It's causing a lot of anxiety, stress, and exhaustion in those athletes that aren't in those, you know, the top performing stars. It's just an unfair, I don't know what the solution is, but it is, I would say it's kind of a disaster.
Yeah, I completely agree. We are down to our last couple of minutes. What haven't we asked you about? What final points you want to make sure you make before we wrap it up?
I think we covered a lot of it. You know, I really would love to hear from the community as we move through this negotiation process with the university. We would love to have the community support. You know, I think sometimes NMSU feels separate from the community, and we're a part of it. I was born and raised here. You know, I'm so grateful for NMSU. If it wasn't for the hardworking faculty at NMSU, Las Cruces would be a very different community. It would be much poorer. It would be less diverse. It would be less better in every single way. And so as a native-born daughter of this community, I'm just so grateful for NMSU and mainly the faculty that have worked so hard. And we need to rally to support our faculty, because right now our faculty are at the bottom of the pay scale, compensation scales, healthcare scales, and we need to remedy that.
Well, once again, we have been talking with Michelle Granger, and she is working with the group Higher Ed Labor United.
Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you both for having me. I am so grateful for this opportunity, and keep up the good work. This is a great show.
Oh, thank you so much.